The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's, I guess, technically the WEEI producer show type deal, but it is me, Chris Scheim. Normally, we used to do this show 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., but instead moved a little bit of relocation. And joining me this time, first time ever, him and I have ever done a show together, my guy Terp. What's up, Terp?
What's going on, Scheim?
You ready?
I'm ready. Let's
party.
All
right, let's go. That was Joe Mazzulla you just heard coming into this segment. Celtics won last night, 108-104 against the Brooklyn Nets. Terp, immediate reaction to the Celtics win last night.
Winning ugly. I mean, there is something to be said about winning an ugly game like that. I mean, that was probably the worst game we've seen them play in the early 10-game slate we've seen, and they still find a way to win, and that's important. Like Joe Mazzulla said in that cut we just heard, that's what made them so good last year, just simply finding a way to win games, and that's what they did last night.
Yeah, it was a bit of a struggle for the Celtics a little bit there. They won it overtime. Jason Tatum led the way with 33 points for the Cs, but a lot of missed opportunity there for some guys, a lot of shots they probably want back. Didn't shoot great from the floor in particular. Guys like Derek White only being 1 of 6 from three. Sam Hauser, 2 of 10. Like, just couldn't find the bucket at times. But luckily for them, guys like Jason Tatum, my guy P. Pritch, Drew Holiday stepping up a little bit and getting them over the hump there against a bad Brooklyn team, right? They have a little bit of talent, but this is not a very good basketball team.
Yeah, credit to Jordy Fernandez, though. He has them playing tough, and that's a good thing. Like, they're starting to lay the foundation of what they want to do, and it kind of looks a lot like the Celtics. Like, they're going to play physical, and they're going to jack up threes. So you're starting to see the vision. I know we've only seen 10 games of it, but they're playing hard. So it's not the Brooklyn team that we've seen in the past, but still a team that the Celtics were expected to blow out. But Joe Mazzulla tells his team all the time that you can't play into the expectations. Things aren't going to go the way they are expected to go. Expect the unexpected. And I think this team does a good job of that. And they do a good job of also just staying the course. Water will find its level, and it did last night.
Yeah, especially in an 82-game season. This isn't like the NFL where right. It's like 17 games. Everyone is important. No, this is 82 games. You know, you're playing currently without Jaylen Brown. Kristaps Porzingis, as we know, is out until at least Christmas time into the new year probably. And so you're trying to just kind of figure your way out. And like, even Cornette was out in last night's game, and that's a big rebounding piece that you don't have. I mean, Xavier Tillman started that game, played the first 6 minutes, and then did not see the court again the rest of the game. But Namias Keita, again, another great performance out of him. 27 minutes, was able to get 10 boards. It's nice to see guys like him kind of stepping up on the occasion and really kind of helping this team out on the glass and on defense as well.
And with Keita, it just feels like every time he's on the floor, good things happen.
Yeah,
for
sure.
Let's be clear, it's not perfect, right? At times he's looked lost defensively. He's kind of had some mishaps where he's going for blocks in positions he really shouldn't be, losing position with the rebounding. But for the most part, he's done his job. And for a young guy like him, who the Celtics took a flyer on and really developed, like, this guy got cut by the Kings 18 months ago in favor of 38-year-old JaVale McGee. And if you're the Kings now, you're like, wow, we let this guy go? Because let's not get excited. Like, it's not like he's going to be, and I see all these comparisons to Rob Williams, and I get it. It's exciting.
Yeah, he's not
it's
Rob
fun.
Williams.
He's not Rob Williams. Who? Rob Williams, first career three-pointer last night. Did you see that?
Ooh, congrats to him.
Mazzulla
good job.
Ball taking over.
Big Rob.
Everyone's taking threes now.
Oh, God.
But he's a serviceable piece, and that's what you want him to be, especially in this new era of the NBA where developing talent is so important. And for the Celtics, they've proven they can do that. Look at Sam Hauser. He was undrafted, played
time at Maine. Pritchard.
Peyton Pritchard, right? For years, they developed him up. Luke Cornette also played in Maine and now a very serviceable big. So it's a guy that you can rely on, and that's what they want. So he's never going to really stuff the stat sheet to a point where like people think he is, right? He's going to be this.
And it's a guy you need right now, especially with Kornet being hurt. Of course, Porzingis is hurt. Al Horford is turning to dust on the court as we speak still, but he's still going strong. So it's like you have to find guys who can get out there and get you meaningful rebounds throughout the course of a game so that Jason Tatum's allowed to play to his full potential, right? You're not forcing him to be down, you know, grabbing boards and playing down low. He's able to kind of play the way he wants to, continue to facilitate, continue to take those three-point shots, and continue to kind of drive that offense.
Yeah, and I think this is the best version of Jason Tatum that we've seen. I mean, look at last night. He scored or assisted on 16 of Boston's final 23 points.
Yeah, it's huge.
When they needed him most, he showed up. And when you look at him, more so it's just his continued growth as a playmaker. And he has no problem being that distributor, being that facilitator. And I don't know how you feel about analytics. It's a big conversation on the Slam Pod here.
I once was called, when it comes to at football at least, I was once called a DVOA hole. So
you're
yeah,
a fan.
Big analytics guy.
What would your thoughts be on potential assist?
I like it if it serves my argument. Generally.
Okay, so in this case, it would. Jason Tatum, 32 potential assists over the last two games.
Nice.
He only has 8.
Yeah.
So he's making the right reads. And the reason I like the potential assist is because, and not to go all analytical here, but it shows that you're doing the right thing.
You're making playing, the right decision.
Right. You're playing with the process. And like I said at the beginning, the Celtics do a good job of weathering whatever storm's going on, keep shooting, keep playing their game, and eventually it happens.
So does potential assist just mean like he made the right decision, kicked it out, guy took a shot and just missed the shot?
Essentially,
per se?
Yes. Essentially, it's okay. Just a missed opportunity for an assist. So,
yeah, and so he's probably hitting a guy like Hauser who's wide open, who's going 2 of 10 from 3.
Right.
And it's like, oh, well, that sucks.
And one of the plays the game last night was Sam Hauser's corner 3. It was 1 of 9, I believe, before he knocked that down. And Jason Tatum, no reluctancy to pass it to him, drove, made a right move. Sam Hauser knocks it down.
I think the only thing I have issues with Jason Tatum sometimes, and I kind of had an argument with Wiggy about this on Friday, was you look back even, you know, 2 games ago now to that Warriors game, when he's shooting really well, like, I want him to take more shots. I know that's not necessarily in his demeanor, that's not necessarily the way he likes to play, but when he's shooting 50% from the floor, I want you to take more shots in a game that you're losing. A game against a tough opponent like the Warriors, where Steph Curry's playing well, Andrew Wiggins is playing well, like, I want you to kind of just take the ball and go to the bat. Like, do your thing. Continue to do what you're doing because you're literally shooting 50% from 3 and from the floor. Like, just continue to shoot the ball.
Right. I'm with you. And that's been kind of the story for him this year. If you just look at it, 30.5 points.
Especially with no Jaylen Brown. That's kind of what bugged me about
25 points this year that you're missing now with Jaylen Brown. But Jason's averaging 30 points on 47.8% shooting. But that's part of what makes him so good is his ability to defer. And a lot of players and superstar positions like him aren't willing to do that, right? They want to be, especially when Jaylen Brown's out, they want the ball, they want the scoring points. And that really stuck out to me in the NBA Finals last year. A guy like Jason Tatum, who is gunning for the face of the league, and that's something, he might not talk about it publicly, but that's something he wants. And I think anyone should want that. And I give Jason Tatum a lot of credit because he's really embracing the MVP chase this year, where it's something like, both things can be true. You can want to be the best version of yourself and try to win an MVP, and you can also want your team to win championships. And I think he walks that line perfectly. And clearly, he's still making the right moves. But if you're looking at the NBA Finals, he constantly made the right read. He didn't make it about himself, and he didn't jack up unwarranted shots. He played within the game and ended up leading the team in points, rebounds, and assists. So,
yeah, and when the Celtics are ahead and when they're winning, like, I think that's great. Like, it's I'm glad he plays that way. I think it's just in moments of, I guess the word I'll use is crises, right? When you're down 6 to the Golden State Warriors, like, and you're shooting as efficiently as you have been, like, take over. You should want to take the next shot. And I think that's where I wish, and again, this, I just don't think this is who Jason Tatum is. I don't think this is in his like character, in his blood. That's just not the way he thinks or feels. And that's okay. But I just, in those moments, when you need it, and you're playing so well. Like, it's not like he couldn't hit, you know, toss the ball in the ocean in that game. Again, 50% from the floor. Like, brother, find a way to take that shot. Even if it's on Joe Mazzulla to get him a catch and shoot opportunity because he's getting doubled a lot, like, then you need to do that. I think that's kind of the one complaint I would have over the last couple games.
I think you hit it at the end there, that he was getting doubled a lot, especially in that Golden State game. Hell, they were showing 3 or 4 at him at times there. But
as soon as he touched the ball, Kerr was sending guys.
Right, and they blitzed him all night, and it made him comfortable. And credit to Steve Kerr, because he had the right game plan. Without Jaylen Brown, they just blitzed Jason Tatum, made everyone else beat him. And
I'm kind of surprised other teams haven't done that more.
Yeah, I think.
And granted, it's only been, what, three games without Jaylen Brown, but four games without Jaylen Brown. Thank you, Tom.
We saw Detroit do it. I mean, Brooklyn do it last night.
Yeah.
They're really physical with them, and they're going to be physical, especially at the point of attack with Jason Tatum. But to that point, with the Celtics offense, it primarily revolves around creating two-on-one advantages.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're showing two or three at Jason Tatum, you have that two-on-one advantage elsewhere.
Yeah, so somebody's open.
Joe Mazzulla is really process-oriented. Like, they're going to go with what works. And clearly, it does work. They have the best record in the NBA over the last 3 years and an NBA championship to prove it. So if you're Joe Mazzulla, you don't want him forcing those up. And I get it. Like, people want Jason Tatum to take over in that moment, but they want to just stick with the process of which got them there.
Yeah, and like, that's good. I get that, but I mean, that doesn't always work. I mean, ask Kyle Shanahan how continuing to throw the football helped him in that Falcons-Patriots Super Bowl up 28-3.
Right.
Like, when sometimes you need to adjust your process over the course of a basketball game. And I think that's maybe, so maybe my complaint is more with Mazzulla than it is with Tatum. And I think that's possible. Like, I think maybe Kerr just outcoached the crap out of him in that game. And that's why you see Golden State beat the Celtics. But I just wish that that process would change at times. It needs to be a little bit more fluid, I guess, is the way it is. Like, you just don't have to be hard and fast in one set of parameters.
I do think they make the necessary adjustments, but again, it's just they don't defer from what they do right. And that's, you saw that last night. The three balls weren't flying, or they weren't falling. They weren't really playing great offense, but they didn't get away from what got them there. They stuck by the process and eventually eked out a win. So it's... when they're winning, people don't really say much about it. When it's close, it's obviously more highlighted. And another thing is, too, with the NBA, naturally defenses are better in the final couple minutes. Like, in those moments, especially at the end last night, that Tatum shot that missed and went into overtime,
yep,
that wasn't a great play call. Like, I'm not going to defend that. But the best you're
He's
getting...
He's not Brad Stevens calling up those
Well, that
those
first
plays.
One that tied the game was incredible.
Yeah.
And that was a Brad Stevens play.
Yep.
And actually, 2 years to the day, Jason Tatum dunked on Jared Allen in Cleveland on that exact same play to tie the game in force overtime.
Awesome.
And they lost that game. So they're making steps because they ended up winning that game last night. But I won't defend the play call at the end there because defenses are just better in the final minutes. You're more engaged. You're more physical. It's just part of the game. And the best shot you're getting is a fadeaway or a contested three.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, what are you going to live with? And in that moment, if Jason Tatum already got the up fake, he got the defender to jump, lean into it. Try to draw the foul.
Yeah.
If you're going to take a bad shot,
be a superstar.
Be a superstar. Right.
And like, the superstars get those calls. So lean into it, get that call. And it's like, all right, we're cooking with gas. That was the right decision. But so I guess for me, to this point in the season, granted, we're only 10 games in. I am happy with how the Celtics have performed thus far. Goodness. And I think they need to just continue to keep rolling. And getting Jaylen Brown back will help. Like, this team will continue to get better as the season goes on. But it's just, it's unfortunate because, like, you want them to be historically good. And that's not necessarily what they're pushing for. They just want to win another title. And I get that. But at the same time, as a fan, like, you just, they're so good, you want them to win every night. And so I guess I look back at that Warriors game and I'm a little upset.
Yeah, and eventually they are going to find that level. And I already do think they look very good. And obviously they're 8-2, and they look a lot like they did last year.
But I feel like they've also been able to win games and haven't been playing their best. Like,
right.
You've seen them play like amazing in a few games. But out of the 10, there's been three or four where they've been kind of mediocre and yet have still been like above 500 in those five games.
And early on, it was because of the defense. The defense wasn't there the first couple games of the season. It's really starting to pick up now.
Well, you saw it in that Pacers game. The defense was nowhere to be found.
Nowhere, right. And they're starting to figure it out now. And it's part of it's because you haven't had your full lineup, really. You've had guys in and out of the lineup. Even before Jaylen was out, Sam Hauser was out. So you're having guys that are stepping in. You've used a ton of different starting lineups. So it's part of finding that continuity. I know they have almost the exact same team as last year. They only lost Savi Mihailuk and O'Shea Brissett, but they're still finding that, easing back into it. And I wouldn't say they're easing back into it because they hit the ground running. We saw it in the preseason and we saw it against New York on ring night, but it's just not going to go as planned. Like, they were so dominant last year, they're going to get there. It's just not going to happen overnight.
Yeah, especially the first, 10 games of the season. And I think that's the thing that I need to kind of come to terms with is we're only 10 games in. I just expect them to be as good as they were in the playoffs last year, and that's just not going to happen.
And one
that's
thing,
unrealistic.
Too, is they knew it all year. They talked about it all offseason, human nature. You see teams like Brooklyn. You see teams like Detroit, like Charlotte.
They want to give them their best shot. They're the best team in basketball.
Because that's a measuring stick game. Even Golden State, like, how they were talking about the Celtics last year, and this was my column at EEI the next day, is that they are now like what teams used to look at Golden State like.
Sure.
Look at Golden State used to use, or for years, Boston used Golden State as a measuring stick. If this was 2 or 3 years ago and Boston lost that game to Golden State, we're having some serious conversations.
Yeah.
Whoa, why can't they win in the clutch? Why can't they beat Golden State? They always have their number. But now it's kind of like, whatever. They lost the game in November. It's just that pressure.
Last year, it helped that they beat them by like 50.
Right. And remember the first game they played in Golden State, they ended up losing in overtime. Jason Tatum sprained his ankle. He tried to play through. It wasn't really the same. They lost in overtime. They had a silent bus ride to Sacramento the next game, and they blew the doors off Sacramento and L.A. and ended up coming back like 4-1 on the road trip or whatever it was. So it's just winning a championship is so different now because they are – they have the process. They have the confidence. They know their system works. So there's no more overreacting. And that's a good thing. And again, it's, I want to be clear. It's not a reason. It's not like this is an excuse for everything. Like, oh, you want a championship so you can lose games. That's not it. But like, it does change it a little bit because teams believe in what they're doing and they believe in themselves.
Yeah. And so real quick, I just want one word answer. Do we see Jaylen Brown against the Bucks?
No.
Ooh, okay. So that's what we're going to get to coming up next. We're going to continue to talk about the Celtics here. We'll get into the impact of Jaylen Brown not being on the floor, when we may expect him back. We'll get Terps' view on that, having been in the locker room and talked to some of the players and Joe Mazzulla, see what we got going on there. 617-779-7937 if you want to hop on here with the new version of the producer show, Shime and Terp with you. Up until 6 o'clock, we'll also get into Drake May and the Patriots and their matchup tomorrow with the Chicago Bears. In Chicago. But right now, Tom's going to get you caught up with what's trending around the world.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports. This is the WEEI Producer Show right here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Shime and Terp with you up until 6 o'clock tonight. You're listening in your car. If you get out of your car at all, Terp, you know you can just download the Odyssey app, AUDACY. You can listen to us anywhere, any time of the day.
You know the best part about the Odyssey app?
What's that, Terp?
It's free.
Oh, look at that. So if you're out and about today, you want to continue listening to Terp and Shime here on EEI, feel free to download the Odyssey app wherever you may go. We've been talking Celtics so far. Terp, real quick before the break there, told you he does not expect Jaylen Brown to play against the Milwaukee Bucks tomorrow. So I want to follow that up, Terp, with when do you expect to see Jaylen Brown back? Because it has now been 4 games without Jaylen Brown. The Celtics are, what, 2-2 in that? 3-1 in those games. Sorry. And the offense has looked good, but still they've struggled at times, right? Some of these games have been closer. You look at last night's game and then the game against the Warriors. They haven't been as heavy-handed as they have in previous games so far this year. When do you expect Jaylen Brown back for the Boston Celtics? Is this something to be concerned about?
My target game would be the Cleveland game on the 19th, and
okay,
that's 4 games from now. Because in between there, their next 4 games for the Celtics. Tomorrow, they're at the 2-7 Bucks, who are 14th in the East. Then they host the 4-6 Hawks, who they just 30-pieced in Atlanta without Jaylen Brown. Now, that's an in-season tournament game, but I don't think the Celtics are really gunning for it.
Okay.
Well, they'll try to win it, but it's not really worth jeopardizing health.
Yeah.
So then at the Brooklyn Nets, that's the second night of a back-to-back. So if Jaylen Brown comes back, the Hawks, he's not going to play in the back-to-back.
No.
So, and they just beat the Nets having their worst game of the year. And then they host the 2-7 Raptors, who are 0-4 on the road and losing by almost 10 points a game.
And then the Cleveland Cavaliers come to town, and they are currently undefeated,
that's
by
right.
the way.
So that's the team that I'd probably look at. And I will say this, like, I'm not really concerned about it, just listening to what Joe Mazzulla and the team are saying about it. But I do think people are so caught up in this injury designation, right? It's day-to-day. So I keep hearing, like, how can you be day-to-day for a week? Well, it's quite literally day-to-day.
Yeah,
if they put week-to-week, It'd be probably more accurate.
It's like an old person with a bad back. It's like one day could feel great, could feel like $1,000. Next day, or just one wrong move, and all of a sudden it's like, oh God, I'm in searing pain.
Right. And I looked it up, just basic Google search here, which I know you're never supposed to look up your symptoms or whatever, but it says 1 to 4 weeks for this to cure. So if people are concerned about it in the short term, I guess, because you've seen that the offense and really the team itself doesn't look the same. But that's because he spearheads their transition, and that really brings the energy. And it's a 25-point score. Yeah. So that's 21% of your team's total points that you need
to
fill.
It's one of the reasons Peyton Pritchard has become the odds-on favorite to win Sixth Man of the Year, because he's getting all these minutes, and he's capitalizing on it. He scored a lot of points. I mean, he's averaging, I think he's had 2 bad games out of 10 all year where he's had less than 15 points in a game.
And one was opening night, who nobody remembers.
Yeah, and he was 1 of 10 from the floor.
1 of 9 from 3, and then just bounced back. And I mean, we were talking about it. This guy has a legitimate chance to win 6
minutes. Yeah, and I think it's going to continue to. Jaylen Brown will eventually come back. But again, you've even said this, and we've talked about it before, but Drew Holiday is going to have his minutes limited at times just because he is getting older and you want him to be fresh for the playoffs. And again, their guard depth just isn't that deep. It is literally just White, Holiday, and then Pritchard. And so if either of those guys needs time off, gets injured, anything like that, Peyton Pritchard immediately steps into the lineup and becomes one of your top scorers.
And Pritchard plays every single game. He played all 82 last year, played the whole preseason.
Even when Brown was healthy so far this year, he has played a bunch.
He wants to play. He just wants to be out there. He just wants to hoop. And that's part of what will help him, because he's going to be healthy. He's going to play the whole year. And it's also just he always elevates his game when given the opportunity. Like, look at his end of the game 82 of the last 2 years. He always goes for a triple-double. The last 2 years, he's had a triple-double. It's crazy. 30-point triple-doubles in a game that he actually gets to kind of be the number one catalyst. And I'm all for it. You and I have been talking about it. I really am all in on the Peyton Pritchard Sixth Man of the Year campaign. And part of that's because of that reputation. And now he's becoming a household name because of those big threes he hit in the finals.
Yeah, so we look at probably the Cavaliers game for a return from Jaylen Brown. I would say even maybe a chance that you see him in that Raptors game, just because it's a way for him to come in with limited minutes, kind of get back into the swing of things, get back into a rhythm, and that way during that Cleveland game, who is a really good opponent in a game you probably want to win to set a standard, he is a full go and ready to rock.
Yeah, and he's not going to have any problem assimilating back into this offense. He really is one of the major catalysts, and I think people are really seeing that, because the Celtics can hurt you in so many different ways, but once you start taking links out of that, it gets harder. And a guy like Jaylen, who really is he runs their transition offense, and that's what they really could have used the last 2 games. Look at Golden State and look at Brooklyn, where they weren't really playing with a ton of energy. It took them a little while to get going in the first half.
It's really just a half-court offense.
Right, and Jaylen gets out and pushes them. He wants them to go, and Al Horford takes
What's that athleticism
well.
That just kind of takes over? I mean, he is bigger and stronger than every guy on the floor.
I think he
and
is
faster.
One of the most deadly players in transition because of his athleticism, how fast
he showed up
to
training camp looking like Superman.
He, it's crazy because it was a matter of 3 months between when they won the finals
and
when
he got yoked out of his mind.
He had 10 pounds of muscle in a span of 3 months. That's insane.
And it didn't mess up. And I think the cool thing, too, is it hasn't messed up his shot, the way, his rhythm when shooting either. Because I think you see that a lot of times in sports, especially baseball, right? Guy starts hitting the gym a little too hard, gets a little yoked, and then all of a sudden his swing's a little off, timing's a little off. With Jaylen, it was, I'm going to get yoked and still be just as good, if not better.
That was a theory for Jason Tatum and his three-point shooting.
Correct.
He was too strong. He was getting in the gym too much.
Lamar Jackson last year, everybody's like, he gained 20 pounds. Goes and wins the MVP, loses 20 pounds this offseason, gets slimmer again, and it looks even better.
So, yeah, that's important. And they miss Jaylen. They miss him a lot, but you obviously don't want to push him. And I'm not sure if this is something, again, I don't have a medical history or any degree or anything.
You're Dr. Terp.
Yeah, I mean, sure. formerly known. Yeah.
formerly known as Dr.
Yeah,
Terp.
Yeah, formerly known as. But people are just looking into this because it's how can this be a long-term thing? I just don't see it being one. I mean, in the short term, yes, you miss him, but is this something that's going to be bothering him come April, May, June when they need him most? I just don't see it if you take the right precautions now.
And do you think that he is being held out this long and probably a little bit longer specifically so that it does not become something that reoccurs later, that he re-aggravates later, and that it fully heals? Because it's again, We're 10 games into the season out of an 82-game season. The playoffs are the most important thing, which happened after the 82 games, by the way. So right now, if he has to miss 2-3 weeks just to make sure he's fully healthy, the Celtics are okay with that.
I think that's what it is. I just don't think they want to push anybody at this point. Yeah. They know that health is the most important part of this team. And also, in a way, they're embracing it because it's giving guys like Namish Keita, like Jordan Walsh, it's giving them looks, it's giving them run, an opportunity to experiment with different things. So the only thing this is hurting right now is potentially Jaylen Brown's candidacy for All-NBA and All-Defensive because of that 65-game threshold he has to hit.
Yeah, and yeah, that may be an issue, but like at the same time, this is a guy who normally isn't out for long periods of times with injuries. So, you know, if he does fully heal from this, you don't really expect anything like that to kind of pop up again the rest of the way.
And a lot of the games he missed last year were at the end of the season because the Celtics won the East by 14 games.
Yeah, they had it in their pocket. It was they were just resting him for the playoffs.
3 weeks before the season ended, they clinched the NBA's best record at home field or home court advantage.
And if they're in that same position this year and he needs, you know, 10 games out of the last 15 to get all NBA, he'll probably play those final 10 and just, yeah, it's fine. Who cares?
It's still early, but you're looking at it like Cleveland's going to be in the conversation. So you might not, you're not going to have the luxury. You're definitely not going to have the luxury of 14 games.
And you were on this before anybody else that you were saying that Brad Stevens had tipped his hand telling you that Cleveland would be the second best team in the East. And you're seeing it right now. They absolutely murdered a Warriors team that just beat you the other night.
Yeah, Kenny Atkinson's unlocked something with that team because they didn't make any external moves this year. Yeah. They just re-signed all of their guys, and I think Mobley and guys like Allen, Okoro.
And it was more confidence that Donovan Mitchell wasn't going anywhere.
That was huge, too. Like, for the last couple of years, it's always been like, where's Donovan going after this year? Well, he was back, and you were able to really turn it. And I just think the J.B. Bickerstaff experiment there just kind of flopped out. It felt like they were tuning him out.
Yeah, I feel like Mobley and Allen have been way better this season than last year, and I mean, Jared Allen's been awesome. I've been a big Jared Allen guy. He's made me a lot of money over the last 2 years now.
Walking double-double.
Yeah, the guy is just the best. He is, oh God, it's so good. But regardless, like, it's just, that Cleveland team is just all around good. They have the bigs, they can get those boards, and then you have a guy like Donovan Mitchell who can take a game over, and even Darius Garland, right? At times you've seen him, when he has a hot night, he just gets going and all of a sudden he scores 30.
Well, that's another thing too, is Garland really stepping it up, because when they re-signed both those guys, and Mitchell and Garland, they had to prove that they can be the formidable backcourt that people were hoping they could be, because in the years past, I feel like it hasn't really reached expectations. And now, at least early on here, Kenny Atkinson is really unlocking something. And this is a guy who's won a championship in Atkinson, was in Golden State when they beat the Celtics in the 2022 finals. So that's so important, having that experience, and a guy that's been in the league, around the league forever. So that's huge. And he's really unlocking things. And like I said, when we talked about it the first time with Brad Stevens and the GM survey pick of the Cavs, when Brad Stevens talks, especially around teams that he's looking at, I listen. And that
he's
had my
smart
ears perched right away.
Yeah, he kind of knows what's going on around the league, especially when everybody else is picking the Celtics. It's like, only one guy can't pick the Celtics.
I mean, just look at the moves he's made. Like, brought in a guy like Derek
White. He hasn't missed. Like, the trading Kemba, bringing back Al Horford, it's like, oh yeah, you get a guy in an expiring contract. Oh wait, no, Al Horford is going to contribute like the entire season for multiple years and play until he turns into the Sphinx. Like, it's just like he's been awesome. And then the Brown and Tatum combination has just been getting better. The hiring of Mazzulla, Sam Hauser, Peyton Pritchard, Drew Holiday, Derek White. Like, it just keeps, every decision he makes seems to work.
And to the credit of him, like you just said, the hiring of Mazzulla. Even more so, the hiring of Mazzulla, sticking with Mazzulla.
Yeah.
Because everybody was calling for Mazzulla's head after his first season, and Brad Stevens was never considered it.
No,
that was their guy from the start. They were going to run it back with Joe Mazzulla.
Well, because he was a Brad Stevens guy. Like, I don't think Udoka definitely wasn't a Stevens guy. He was, I think, like an organization guy, whereas Joe Mazzulla was an absolute Stevens guy. And I think it's been so good. This team has been so good because ideologically, the coach and the GM are on such the same page. Like, Brad Stevens wanted to do this with his Celtics teams and was never able to have the right pieces and organize it quite the way he envisioned it, whereas now him and Mazzulla share a very similar vision. Mazzulla is able to carry it out, and then Brad Stevens is able to supply him with the right players.
Mazzulla is the absolute perfect coach for this team right now and what they're trying to do, and I do think the timing was perfect. It's all about timing.
Yeah,
about
for sure.
Where players are, where coaches are, what's going on in everyone's career. Like, I think Ime Udoka, as much as like people want to, like, Joe Mazzulla was successful after and won a championship, obviously, but Ime Udoka still deserves credit because I think he got to through these guys. He unlocked
something.
He's a good
coach.
He's a great coach. Obviously a great coach, and I think he's doing well in Houston as well. But he unlocked something within this team that kind of gave them that tough love that they needed coming from Brad Stevens. And then Joe completely built off that and really changed it and flipped them ideologically. And it's just so important what they're doing now because last year they had these sky-high expectations, and they were able to win the NBA Finals by not buying into those, focusing on the day-to-day, and they literally had T-shirts that said mindset on it. That was their slogan. That was their rallying cry last year. That was their Mbutu. That was their thing. That's what brought them to the NBA Finals. So I just think that's so important what Joe has brought to them, and he has such a unique way of connecting with this team, and it's worked, and clearly in Banner 18 will.
He's such a unique guy, too. The fact that he is such a good NBA coach, and yet Jones and Keefe can play who said it, Joe Mazzulla or a serial killer, is amazing. Like, it's just, it's good. It's great content for us, but it's also, like, great for the basketball team.
Right.
Like, to see my coach be like, yeah, you know, words can't hurt me. So what? What's he going to do? He's not attacking me. He's saying words. Those don't hurt me. Or, like, none of you are going to be at my funeral. Like, I find that hilarious. It is tremendous.
He wins over 70% of the games he coaches. Like,
yes.
Let that settle in. 70%. He's the all-time. He holds the NBA record as of right now for the all-time highest win percentage.
That's crazy.
3 years. And it's a small sample size.
Yep.
But he's been in the league for 3 years. They've had the best record in the NBA over those 3 years. Went to the Eastern Conference Finals. Rallied from an 0-3 deficit, which they should have beaten Miami.
Yep.
So let's not pretend like he was perfect.
Tatum injury and all that stuff.
He was perfect that series. They should have never went down 0-3 to Miami.
He was also going up against a far superior coach in that game.
He was also thrown into the fire.
Yeah.
And inherited a depleted staff because Will Hardy, who was one of Ime Udoka's lead assistants, took the job in Utah.
Right.
And then Damon Stoudemire left for Georgia Tech midway through the year, right before the playoffs in March.
And then what did they do in that offseason? They loaded up. They get Cassell in here.
Charles Lee.
Yep, Charles
Emile
Lee.
Jefferson.
Yeah.
They completely redid the coaching staff. And just you saw it last year, how 1 year of one offseason to prepare for Joe Mazzulla made all the difference. He was clearly more comfortable in his own shoes. He had already made an impact on this team. And this was, looking back, like the first week of training camp last year. It was so obvious that he had already made his impact. Like, he was starting to have an influence on this culture. And that takes a special leader because this is one of the most prestigious franchises
for sure
in all of sports. And for a guy like Joe Mazzulla, who at the time was 34 years old, came from being a second-row assistant, for him to come over, take over this team, lead them to an NBA Finals in his first full year as a head coach, because I don't really consider it his first year a full year. He took over 3 days before training camp.
He was the interim coach for half the year.
Yeah. And he still had
him. They didn't make him the full-time head coach until, like, January.
It was All-Star break. He had the best record in the NBA, and that's why he coached the All-Star team. He should have coached the All-Star game last year, but there's the Riley rule that prohibits you from being it twice. So there's a good chance, well, maybe Kenny Atkinson this year if Cleveland keeps rolling, but there's a good chance he coaches them this year. But just his ability to come in and so uniquely connect with this team and really lay the groundwork. Again, it's just, this is one of the most prestigious franchises. It's so hard to break through these guys that are so talented. They have all the talent in the world.
Especially in the NBA when it's so superstar-driven. Like, it's different than in football. Like, I truly believe in football, a coach can instill a culture.
Yes.
And really kind of establish a system and a feeling within a building. Whereas basketball, it's so difficult because players like LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and all these big names and big, huge personalities, the Anthony Edwardses of the world, right? Where it's like, I have to come in and kind of mesh with that guy or, like, be his boss, and you have to walk a very fine line.
Your top six was six All-Stars.
Yeah.
Plenty of decorated awards around that group, and you have them all bought in on one idea of sacrifice, and that's continuing this year. How many times do you see these super teams, quote-unquote, you see the downfall of it saying, oh, there's only one ball there, and they start tuning out the coach, and the coach is always the first to get fired.
Always.
Look at Frank Vogel last year in Phoenix, out, first year. That's the thing. Like, there's only one ball. They connect with Joe Mazzulla in a special way, and he's the perfect leader for this team.
617-779-7937 if you want to get in on the producer show today with Shime and Terp right here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. This is the WEEI producer show right here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. We've been talking Celtics all hour long so far, Terp. Real quick, though, I do want to just mention the Bruins are playing tonight. Bruins are at, they are facing the Ottawa Senators tonight. Linus Ullmark might get his revenge against the Bruins today. Do you expect to see a goalie hug?
I do. I do think we get one.
Terp thinks we're going to... Okay, so I don't think so. I actually think Swayman low-key doesn't love Ullmark the way they think he does. Or, like, they make it seem like it. Especially if the Bruins lose, ain't no way. You might get like, a handshake or, like, a small little hug, like, pregame. But no, like, actual goalie hug.
End handshake line there, they're going to both be at the end? I could totally see it. I could totally see it.
Especially if the Bruins lose, like, 8-2 again.
Very possible.
No chance. No. This Bruins team sucks, by the way. Talk about the polar opposite of the other winter sport in town. Like, the Celtics are awesome. It's like they lose two games, and you're like, nah, what are we doing? Like, you should have been going for the perfect record. And then you look at the Bruins, and the Bruins are 7-7-1 through 15 games. It has been a disaster.
It's funny, too, because it feels like it's mostly the same core. It's mostly the same group of guys leading this team.
So it is, but except for the fact that you brought in a new number one center in Elias Lindholm, who for whatever reason, I don't know if it is a disconnect between the men or the system, between him and Pasternak, whatever's going on there isn't working. And then you bring in Zadorov, who everybody was amped. Everybody was juiced up about Nikita Zadorov coming in the door because he's big, strong, hits people. Oh, by the way, has like a penalty in every single game.
And that's been their biggest problem, is their penalties. I'd be curious. I don't know if you can find the stat anywhere, but like, how many of their goals allowed have come on a power play?
Terp, I'm really glad you mentioned this because per our Scott McLaughlin, who covers the Bruins here at WEEI, I saw he tweeted this the other day. So this was, I think, prior to the win against the Flames the other night. Jeremy Swayman in 5-on-5 hockey, 8th. In save percentage in hockey, which is great for what you're paying him now as a contract. Top 10 goalie is where you need him to be. Preferably, you want him top 5, but 8th is not bad. That's an okay spot to be. However, on the PK, he's like 46th.
And that's not on the goalie always.
No, like,
that's
not. It's 5-on-4.
Some of it is.
Sure. Like in the playoffs, right, when you're on the PK, you want the goalie to steal one. But for how frequent the Bruins are on the PK, it becomes difficult. You look back to the Toronto game 2 games ago where they lose 4-0. The Bruins were 0-6 on the power play themselves, yet were 2-for-7 on PK. Like because Toronto just, or I'm sorry, 3-for-7. 3 of the 4 goals were scored on the power play. It's like that's unsustainable.
It's undisciplined is what it is. And it's weird because this team under Jim Montgomery, I mean, look at what they've done in the regular season his 2 years here. They had the best regular season in the history of NHL hockey his first year. Mm-hmm. And last year, they were still a good team in the NHL. Not as great as they were the year before, but they've never had these discipline issues. No. I don't understand where this is coming from.
And so I think it's, again, I think it's a system issue right now. And that's the hard part here is our guy, Scoops Keefe, had the report, what now, just over a week ago, maybe a week and a half
that
ago.
That was Halloween because he was sitting here in the Raleigh Figures
that's
costume.
Right. So it was Halloween that Keefe had the scoop that Jim Montgomery was legitimately on the hot seat. And then Keith and Jones were surprised that he lasted over the weekend because they lose that game to Carolina 8-2, and it's like, oh, here we go. You're going to get fired. Doesn't get fired. They win back-to-back on the weekend against the Flyers and Kraken, both by shutouts. And then it's like, okay, well, now you can't fire him. You just won 2 back-to-back. Like, what are we doing? And so now you're 2 games later than that, and there's still nothing. And I always felt like, for me, that might have been – Keith might have been fed a little bit of bad information.
I don't know because – there clearly has to be – something's wrong. Something is very wrong with
that
this
team. That I agree with you.
There has to be a change because with the point system in the NHL, it's so hard to make up ground. Mm-hmm. So something has to change sooner rather than later. And I don't think they necessarily believe in Montgomery if he's not – why did he get the contract extension if they believe in him?
True. I guess that's fair. But like – 2 seasons is the best regular season coach in hockey. And it's not even close. Like it's – he has – dominated the regular season. The last 2 years, they started the first 10 games 9-1-0, 9-0-1. Like that, you could not ask for anything more of a head coach. He gets you to the playoffs. You're one of the best teams in hockey. You unfortunately got bounced in the first round of the playoffs, unfortunately, 2 years ago. And then last year, you beat the Maple Leafs in the first round, thanks to Swayman and Pastrnak, and then you lose in the second round to the eventual Stanley Cup champions. You've been bounced twice by the Florida Panthers, and so for me, it's been an overreaction by Neely and Sweeney to the fact that you keep losing to the Panthers, who are just awesome. The issue is the Panthers love to press you, especially when they're on the PK. They're just in your grill constantly. And so the Bruins were such a skilled team and based on speed that it just wasn't working. They were about puck possession. Then this year, it's like, ooh, let's try and get more physical. Let's get it more aggressive. We need to be more physical against the Panthers. And that's just not what Jim Montgomery does well.
And it feels like that's what they kind of built towards, too. That was an organizational thing, because all you heard is about the size of this team, how big they are, how physical,
those were the buzzwords in the offseason.
That was the buzzwords. Like, that's all you heard, and it's just backfired. I just don't understand, like, to your point, like, it's one thing to be good in the regular season. Like, you have to get it done in the postseason. But why would you make such a drastic change?
It didn't make sense. It's because, again, I think it was an overreaction by Neely and Sweeney to the fact that you've gotten bounced by the same team 2 years in a row in the playoffs. And it's like, it's tough because that team went to the Stanley Cup and then won the Stanley Cup. They're just a really good hockey team. They have a great goaltender. They're fast and they're physical. You were fast, skilled, and now you have a great goaltender. Linus Ullmark, I think, was a disappointment in the playoffs.
It's terrible in the postseason.
Yeah, yeah.
Just put
not
it
good.
Out this. He was terrible.
He was, yeah, you're right. He was not good in the playoffs, and that's why he's no longer on the team. But so I think this massive switch to physicality was an overreaction by the front office, and I don't think Jim Montgomery loves it because that's not how he wants to play hockey. He wants to play puck possession, move the puck. It is about the quality of the shot more than the quantity of shots. But with this lineup, it requires you to play dump and chase, get it deep, play in front of the net, be more physical than the other team, and try and stuff the puck in the net. And that's just, I don't think, what Montgomery wants to do.
And if he's not on board with this organizational switch, he is in trouble. Or this philosophy change, rather, not a switch. Because Sweeney's not going anywhere. He gave you all
which is
the
disappointing,
tools
though.
Necessary in that, or the last 2 years. He gave you all the tools necessary.
But this is going to be Sweeney's third coach as the GM. Like, when do people start looking at him and being like, something's wrong? Like, eventually Chiarelli was shown the door because things just weren't working. When will that happen for a guy like Don Sweeney, who has now been through Claude Julien, Bruce Cassidy, and Jim Montgomery? Whereas, I mean, Julien was good here and then left and did nothing. Cassidy was great here.
Just too mean.
Yeah, just too mean. Leaves and immediately wins a Stanley Cup with the Vegas Golden Knights. Like, how do you cope with that?
Yeah, no, it's a good question.
Especially if Montgomery goes and has success elsewhere. It's like, oh, hmm.
Because you know he's going to get a job.
Yeah,
if he's to get fired, he is getting scooped immediately.
If Sweeney and Montgomery were fired tomorrow, who gets a job first?
Probably Montgomery.
Yes! That's exactly right.
But if it's an organizational disconnect, like with the philosophy, where does ownership and the higher-ups view this? Because that's what it's going to come down to.
That's the tough part.
That's what it's going to come down to. If they believe that Sweeney has the vision, he's getting the players, and Montgomery's just not making the most of it, because the reality is they have most of this team locked up. Like, this is the team that they're stuck with.
Yes, it is.
So if the coach, this is your team, if the coach doesn't fit and you have all these players locked up, you can't get rid of all the players, who's going to go?
Exactly.
It's the coach.
And unfortunately, I think where the battle is lost for Montgomery is that the guy who will end up making the decision is Cam Neely. Like, it's because Cam Neely is not going anywhere. The Jacobs are just not going to get rid of him. And so he'll make the ultimate decision, and he's going to stick with his guy, Neely, over the head coach who he knows he can easily replace.
Do you think he makes it through the year?
No. I think he's fired in January. Like, the new year, basically.
And do you have, you always hear it's going to be who you're going to bring in. Like, because if you're going to fire somebody, you're going to bring someone in. Is that person on staff?
I think they have to be. I don't know.
Especially if it's midseason.
Yeah, I don't know who it would be. But, Greg threw out this crazy theory that maybe you just, like, bring in Bergeron, kind of what the Colts did with Jeff Saturday. Like, if things, like, if...
what a disaster
that
was.
Like, if crap hits the fan, it's like, well, let's just bring in Bergeron, get like a little good pub, And like maybe because I think he has said he would be interested in becoming a head coach in the NHL down the line. So maybe it's like, oh, yeah, we'll give you your opportunity. But there's no commitment here. And then it's like you just finished the season as the head coach and then you could go coach elsewhere or
Wouldn't
whatever.
That be the most Bruin? They've been, for whatever reason, they've been so stuck to this core. They've just been so obsessed with them.
Well, that's why I was stunned. I felt like if they were going to fire Montgomery, it would have happened 5 days ago on November 4th, Election Day, because it's the perfect way to news dump firing an NHL head coach.
Oh, it's going
to
happen. They're going to do it in, on a news dump.
Oh, so they're just going to wait
Super Bowl Sunday, maybe. Maybe too late.
That might be a little too late. And because it's not a local team having success.
Well, that's the thing, though. The further we get into the season, I think the less possible it is that he goes.
Really? Okay.
Because I don't think you're going to make a move. Like right now, you're still in contention, obviously. We're still early in the season. You're still in contention. If you have a chance to potentially make the playoffs, you're not going to just blow it up and explode it. That's just not going to happen. So the more and more time goes on, the less likely it is that they don't make a change because you're in the hunt. You at least have a chance. Now, the further down in the standings they are, the more chance he's gone next year. I don't think there's any chance he's back next year. They're just not going to re-sign him.
978 text, I will vomit on myself if they hug. I always hated
I hated
that.
The hug.
Did
I
you?
Hated the hug. Didn't Razor hate it too?
I think so, yeah. I mean,
that says a lot. That says a lot. A former goalie for the team hated it. I thought it was the most cringy thing ever.
You know, people like myself loved it. It's fine. It showed a great, great relationship. 617-779-7937 if you want to hop on the producer show here with me and Terp. We've talked Celtics most of the hour. We just hit on the Bruins a little bit here. But now, Terp, it's finally time. Let's get into the New England Patriots coming up next here on Boston Sports Original WEEI.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey Original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.